My legs are tired. Bring me coffee. You guys, this is just one of the many shirts that I love from Sarah Marie Design Studio. They have running-inspired gear, gifts, coffee mug, jewelry, you name it, they've got it. It's awesome. And if you use RunLiftMom at checkout, you will save 10%. Go to SarahMarieDesignStudio.com and enter in RunLiftMom at checkout for 10% off. Welcome to the Run Lift Mom podcast, where we're talking about running, lifting, and momming, not necessarily in that order. Today, we're going to be squarely in the momming category, and I am re-releasing this episode very purposefully. The timing of it is intentional. Here's why. Right now, it is 2 days before April Fool's. And here's what happens on April Fool's Day every single year. You open up your feed and you see that someone's pregnant. Ha ha ha, they're not. Here's the problem with that. For those of us who are struggling currently or have struggled to get pregnant, fertility is not a joke. It's not a joke. It's actually a very deep emotional scar. And how do I know? Because I know that you know me as the mom of four, including triplets, but we went through a very intense couple of years of struggling to get pregnant. And that's exactly what you're going to hear. I'm going to link to the longer episode, the Not Your Mother's podcast with Victoria and Sonnet. They are so good. And they talk about the unspoken things in moms' lives. They spoke with me about my infertility journey, but it's through the lens of, okay, here's what it's like, as well as how you can be a friend. I am releasing this 2 days before April Fool's because I know it is not with malice when someone posts that they're pregnant. Ha ha ha, they're not. I know it's not. But it's probably because they have never stepped into the shoes of a woman going through infertility. So, I want you to listen to this show. Even if you weren't thinking of posting something like that on social, I hope it will help you connect with maybe a friend. And I guarantee you know someone who is going through this. And if you are someone listening to this and you are going through a fertility struggle, you're struggling with infertility, I want you to know that you're not alone. I know it's hard to listen to someone who has four kids talk about this specific subject, but there are many, many communities where you can connect with others going through a similar struggle. I also would encourage you to share resources like this with your friends, because guess what? It's probably hard to talk about. If they can put themselves in your shoes or have an understanding of what you're going through, it can be really, really helpful. Let your friends be your friends. They want to be a good friend as you're going through this. So, without further ado, this is again from the Not Your Mother's podcast. I'm going to link to it. Those gals are fantastic. Thank you, ladies, for letting me use this audio. And here I am talking about my fertility struggle, what it's like, what you can do if you think you might be battling infertility, and finally, how you can be a great friend. We knew we were going to do our thing, right? Prior to having kids, but then we wanted to start having kids. And while the practice is fun, you know, after a couple of years when it's not yielding a baby, you start to worry. So we were having problems, right? So like after some time went by and I wasn't getting pregnant and I'm a type A, so I'm like tracking everything there is to track as far as, you know, my menstrual cycles and my this phase and my that phase. We were able to go to a doctor and seek help there. And that really, I mean, it was month after month after month of let's try this and that. And anybody who has gone through this is like, yep, I know what you're talking about. The acupuncture, the Clomid, the stems, the this, the that. And it's like nothing worked. So yeah, I mean, obviously I just introduced, you know, myself as, oh, hey, now I've got four kids. So I know it might be hard for those going through this to feel empathy with a woman that, you know, now has four kids, but both of my children, or all of my children, both of my pregnancies were through an IUI, which is, for those, you know, not familiar, it's like the unsexiest way to have a baby. It's like, it's the turkey baster method. Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, right? And so those who are familiar are also laughing right now, because it is essentially where they will take washed sperm and put it in some tool that I'm sure is fancy, but it looks like a turkey baster to me. And when your follicles are of size and when your body says the time is right and when you have used a stem to make yourself ovulate, they put those bad boys up there. And in 2013, we were blessed with my first son. And then we went on, he was about a little over one. And we said, oh, let's have, you know, another child. Let's give this child a sibling. Notice I'm using singular there. And we went back to that fertility doctor. We did another IUI, which typically doesn't yield triplets. But I'm a triplet mom. So,
oh my God. Right?
So, yeah, wow. 4 kids, 2 pregnancies. I jokingly say, like, they were too successful with us. But I mean, definite blessings. And it's easy for me to laugh about. And it's wild to even tell that story in like 60 seconds because you guys, cycle to cycle, when we couldn't have a child, felt like the longest time period ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I can't imagine. And then the strain on the relationship and just all the exterior things that are around your life as that takes on more and more focus as it's more and longer and longer without seeing results. I can't imagine.
Right. I mean, and obviously I host a show called Run, Lift, Mom. So spoiler alert, I mean, I'm a marathon runner and that's typically my coping technique when things aren't going my way. Also mentioned I'm type A. So the frustrating thing about not being able to have a baby, it's like, this is the thing your body is supposed to be able to do very naturally and easily. And it's also something you can't control. And the first thing your doctors are going to say to you is, you know, and I'm a petite woman. So the first thing every doctor said to me was, oh, stop running so much. Stop exercising so much. What? You want me to take away my coping technique?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're like, so then you want me to be crazy and also not getting the results I want. Thanks. And then so how did that kind of bridge into Run, Lift, Mom, where you are now?
Yeah, well, so the triplets were born when my son wasn't even 2. And I had gone back to work after my son was born. I'm traditionally in health and wellness. I was doing corporate wellness at the time, like, you know, setting up with employers to help folks from everything from biometric screenings to wellness programs. I've always been in the health and fitness world in a career capacity. So I went back to work after he was born and it was all good and it was all good. And then when we had the triplets, I tried, y'all. I tried to go back to work. We got a nanny. Oh my gosh. My son continued to go to like his full-time daycare. The nanny came in because our triplets had been in the NICU and they still had all the monitors and bells and special needs things.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was wild. And I'm saying this, my idiot self went back to work probably because I could control things over there. And it just, you know what it felt? I tried for 6 months and it just felt like I wasn't doing any one thing well. Motherhood, it felt like I was just kind of barely treading water. My job that I had been like really good at and usually like, you know, if something was measurable, I was trying to lead the pack, right? I wasn't doing well there. Even my running, right? My running and my fitness was suffering. I wasn't doing any one thing well. And then we did our taxes and we realized I was paying not to do any of those one things well.
Oh, man.
Spoiler alert for the audience. No. You can max out your childcare credits and just still going to be in that tax bracket. Uncle Sam does not care how much goes to childcare. So I was called to being a stay-at-home mom a little bit untraditionally. But that, I mean, just the finances and just how I was feeling really yielded, okay, I need to be at home with the kids. And now I'm doing the Run, Lift, Mom podcast and connecting with other entrepreneurs like yourself to uplift women because, like, I'm a stay-at-home mom and I love it. And even though I wasn't called to it traditionally, y'all, it's my jam. It is fun. But, like, I have a professional itch to scratch. And so this is the way that I do it.
Brava. I love that. I mean, we really, really relate, of course, to that. And it's interesting. It's everybody's story unfolds differently. So we get to hear so many different ways that motherhood affects the trajectory of a woman's career with our guests. And so in this podcast, we talk a lot about the unsaid and the unspoken. And in your life, in your journey, what would you say is the unspoken part?
You know, I would say, funny enough, the entire journey at the time was unspoken, meaning I didn't talk about it at all. So my coping technique has been taken away. I'm being poked and prodded every month. Y'all, I cannot tell you how many times I sat on my bathroom floor and cried because my period came and I just knew that that was the month. I wasn't talking about it to anyone. And what I find is, because now obviously I have a lot of empathy for women who are going through this, and now I have decided to speak up. And so a lot of women will come to me as they're on their journeys. And what I find is it's getting better. It's better than it was. And actually, I think I'm surrounded by women that are just more courageous than I was. I was ashamed. I was ashamed that like my body couldn't make a baby. And now it feels like people are speaking about it more. Social media, of course, connects us and it helps us find our tribe. I now am able to talk one-on-one with folks that I don't know in my first degree network, but I have girlfriends that are like, oh, I know somebody who's going through this exactly. Could you talk to her? And so that's a really nice, you know, that's a nice thing. But I will say, when you ask me about an unspoken, it's really hard to pinpoint. Is it the unspoken of, I can't do as a woman what my body was designed to do? Or is it just the whole journey? I don't know.
Yeah, all of that encompasses it. And when you explain it to me, like I take away that it's the whole journey. And part of it is that we have that shame and that guilt. And also it's that we can't share. So then we carry that around with us. And it's deep. It really, I imagine it's not just about having a baby. It's so much deeper than that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, and my husband, I'll tell you, and he has shared this on my podcast, so I'm not like throwing him under the bus or like going behind his back, but he could have gone either way. So like, I really just felt something deep, like I wanted to be a mother. I just did, but I would never indulge myself. Maybe this is where I got into my career trouble. I would never indulge myself in the fantasy of having a child once we started having fertility trouble. You know what I mean? Like that time where like you go in your head and you're like, what would it be like to hold this baby and maybe the family pictures and oh, what, hey, you know, all the things that you think about in motherhood. I didn't let myself fantasize about that once we started realizing, ooh, this is not maybe going to happen for us. My husband could have gone either way. He has said, you know, at the time he was feeling like, he didn't want children necessarily. He has opened up and said like, he didn't know if he could love a child like he did his existing family that was there. Now he's then gone on to say that, you know, it's a blessing. He can't imagine his life without the kids, but imagine what in the realm of that unspoken, okay? When you're not talking about it to anyone, and he's kind of the only one that knows what's going on because you're too ashamed to say, yeah, I'm not woman enough to your girlfriends. Imagine what that does in a marriage where your spouse is then wrestling with that truth of, well, I don't even know if I want to be a dad.
And maybe they're thinking like, this is the way to not have the child.
Right. I mean, you know, we're Christian and we believe that God is, you know, guiding us in our journeys. And so, you know, it's right. Hindsight's 20/20. But, you know, he said, well, I thought that was God's way of telling us maybe we shouldn't be having kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely been a journey. And I wish, you know, again, hindsight, but I should have spoken up. I didn't necessarily have to blast it all over my socials or run a podcast about it, but I wish I would have brought in some of my tribe and my network who loves and cares about me to talk about the feelings of frustration and shame and just sadness that I was feeling. That's a dark, dark place to be on your own.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And so like with your husband, how did you two navigate through that, through this issue where he was maybe having second thoughts about having a child and you wanting to push for one? Like how did that happen? Like how did you guys get through that?
Yeah, actually, so it sounds so simple now, but of course, you know, at the time it was a very calculated. First of all, we prayed about it together. And I think that helped. You know, obviously I did not have a tribe that I was talking about this with, but I was talking to someone and that was, you know, God and my husband. So, I mean, we were essentially talking about it pretty in depth as we were praying about it together. And we came to that prayerful decision that we would do fertility services, but we set our boundaries before we got into the services, i.e. before we signed the first document, before we had the first visit, we said, okay, these are the procedures we would be willing to do. These are the things we're willing to try. And this is our cutoff point. And I think that was important because we were having that conversation before we got too emotionally involved. Anyone listening who has had a failed procedure, like a failed IUI or a failed IVF, knows what I'm talking about, in that, like, when you're in that cycle and they're measuring your follicles and they're giving you the stems and you're doing this and that, and you've got all the tubes of stuff that you got to stick into you on the, like, you're way too emotionally involved at that point to say, this is the boundary I'm not willing to cross. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. That's so smart to do it before.
Yeah, we had those conversations. And I will say, just an open dialogue, get it. I recognize that not every one of your listeners, you know, may be praying with their spouse about this, but I really think just a clear dialogue with the spouse is very important.
Yeah, and having a plan and understanding when to let it go and when to keep pushing and being on the same page, because that will alleviate a lot of heartache and frustration and miscommunication in a very emotional journey.
Yeah, great point. I mean, right? It takes it from, this is what I want, well, this is what I want, to, okay, this is what we're willing to do together, and this is where we're willing to, you know, right? It's a plan. I like that language that you use. I think that was really important in, you know, making sure that we were on the same page. And also, it took it from being something that he did because I wanted to, right? Because now he's involved in that plan.
Right. That's big.
That's so big. Now, in one or two sentences, what do you want us to take away from this unspoken area of your life?
Have the courage to open up. That would be my advice for anyone going through this. And then also, I would say, for someone listening that maybe has, you know, been blessed with the gift of fertility and hasn't had to go through something like this, I guarantee there is a woman in your life going through it. So to that woman, I would say, have the courage to be tribe, to be a friend, to listen. Any woman listening to this podcast, like, can take something from this. And that is just, you know, being courageous in that moment, either to be a friend or to share.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, that gives me chills. That's beautiful. Okay, so you work with a lot of women. You talk to a lot of women. You are this living, breathing example of working through fertility and then being an exceptional mom around it. So what are some of the hurdles that you see or obstacles that you see come up for the women that you speak with and that come to you looking for guidance, looking for support around infertility?
I would say, you know what? An obstacle for a woman dealing with this is probably the same obstacle that a mom not dealing with this has. And that's just expectation. There's a, like, what is it? The Shakespeare, expectation is the root of all heartache.
Yeah.
And there's some truth to that. I described a little bit earlier, like, lying on my bathroom floor crying because my period came and I just thought that this was the month. There's that expectation there. And I'm reminded in this season of motherhood, when I have four healthy, beautiful, breathing kids, you know, I expect a lot of things out of myself that maybe are out of my control. Sound familiar? It's that expectation there.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a lot of things in life. So that is so true on both sides of the fertility coin that we experience that.
So if some of our listeners are struggling with a similar issue, what are 1 to 3 tips that you can offer them to navigate this hurdle?
Yeah. So I would say, first of all, if they are feeling like, okay, it is not as easy for me to have a baby as my girlfriends, and I know that the insurance company is going to make me wait, usually it's about 8 to 12 months, you know, everybody's going to be different, I would say to start tracking your cycles immediately. That way you've got some baseline data to take to a doctor and say, I want to be proactive about my fertility. We are a military family. And so what happens with that, and what I didn't mention previously, was in the middle of all this, we are starting and stop. So, like, we're doing a permanent change of station to a different place, right? And then I'm getting a brand new fertility doctor who's like, oh, we're going to do all this baseline testing. Oh, come on, man. I just did this like 4 months ago.
Oh gosh, you have to start over like every time.
Right.
Wow.
Right. So I got smart, and actually the place that we were successful here in North Carolina, I got really smart. And the place before it, I said, give me all of my records. I know they're electronic. Give them all to me, print them out and give them to me. And I took that folder to the fertility doctor here, and I had an app on my phone with all of my cycles from like the last year. And I said, I'm not getting any younger. I'm almost a geriatric pregnancy. These are my records from the last post, and these are my cycles. And do you guys know what? And they were great. They were gracious, and they worked with me on that cycle. That was the cycle I got pregnant with my first
son.
Wow.
So like, had I dragged my feet, or had I not been a little bit bold and said like, I want to be proactive about this. And that's the right language to use. There's nothing wrong with owning that and saying that. And that was the cycle that it happened for us.
How common is infertility?
It's pretty common. What's less common, again, is people talking about it. So, right, as hard as it is to talk to your girlfriends about it, now it's also really hard to walk into a doctor's office. And also, a lot of women of childbearing age, you know, if you're in your 20s, your 30s, you might not have a regular relationship with your primary care manager, your PCM doctor. I mean, we just don't have chronic conditions. Our parents that are in their 60s and 70s, I mean, right, their PCM is on their speed dial. We don't necessarily have that foot in the door with our primary care manager. So it becomes a lot harder to bring up the conversation there as well.
Yeah. And then how you mentioned earlier, like the shame that you get around what you feel like your body should naturally be doing. And then when you have to go to the doctor, it's like making it real.
Right.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. But I mean, if you could go to the doctor and say, I've been tracking my cycle, you know, I thought something was wrong a few months ago. And then when I knew I was coming to you, here's the language you used too. I decided I would get a couple of months of baseline data for you. This is when my cycles began. And I mean, right. And now you're using their language, baseline.
Yeah. You're going in informed and proactive and willing to work with them and give them what they need so you can get what you want.
Right.
I guess, what are signs of infertility other than like the irregular period or tracking your periods? Like what are signs? Like, why would you think that you were infertile? I guess just like not getting pregnant or...
Yeah. I mean, so about 8 months is that long. Like if you've been regularly practicing baby making for about 8 months and nothing has happened, right? You've taken the goalie out of position and nothing has happened. It's definitely time to kind of take a look. Our infertility, this was the most frustrating part. It was unexplained, meaning my husband did all the tests. I did all the tests. They cleared my tubes. Like we did all the things and it was unexplained. I think I was actually undiagnosed with PCOS, which is polyovarian cystic syndrome. Symptoms there are like facial hair, overweight or obesity. Basically, it's like polyps on your ovaries. Now, here's the thing though. I'm a petite woman who has a really good esthetician. And so like I wax all that stuff off my face. So like I would walk into the doctor's office and they'd be like, no, you don't have PCOS, right? Because they're expecting someone like overweight with weird skin to come in. So they'll look at your ovaries, but it's a snapshot of that moment in time. And so they looked at it, right? Every time we moved somewhere new, they would look at it. But I do believe that I was misdiagnosed. But I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it can just be unexplained. But even if it's unexplained, you can still get that help, right? If you're financially blessed to be able to do so. Or, you know, if somebody works for a traditional employer, especially these larger companies, oftentimes fertility is covered up to 80%. So that's something to look into as well, kind of doing homework as you are making career moves, if you think you might want that down the road, or maybe it's a source of funding that you didn't even know existed available right now.
That's so great to hear, because I think a lot of people feel overwhelmed by the cost around it or what they worry the cost would be. So it's hard to even go down that road and to know that maybe there are some options there for you.
Right, right.
It's just such a landmine of different, you know, you start down the road and there's so many different reasons why it could not be working. You know, I'm sure that you could feel just overwhelmed by the options of, well, it could be this or it could be that, or we don't know. And it's unexplained. And meanwhile, you're having this emotional roller coaster every 30 days. Like it's an incredible thing that we don't talk about and that there needs to be more support around.
And every healthcare provider will be like, well, you're stressed and that's affecting it. And it's like,
oh, hey,
really, man? Yeah, no kidding.
And you just say you're really helpful.
I love it when people are like, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm, really? Yeah. I mean, and obviously it's easy for me to laugh at now because I have four healthy, beautiful children. But yeah, did my stress probably affect my cycles? Yeah, for sure. But there are controllables and there are uncontrollables. There are controllables like tracking your cycle and using the right language with your providers and being proactive. And then there are uncontrollables. Y'all, I don't care how many stress management apps you have on your phone or how zen you are. If you're in these shoes, you're not going to be able to, you're going to have some stress.
Yeah. I mean, let's keep it real. And I think that's a really good point to make so that, you know, that's also another reason you can start beating yourself up or feeling guilty. It's like, actually, it's so expected. So
thank you for listening to Run Lift Mom. I am so excited to offer a special discount to listeners of this show, and you're not going to find it anywhere else. So commit it to memory. Use the discount code RLM at checkout on my Alouette site to receive 15% off your order. You're going to go to alouette.com/runliftmom, and you can find that linked in the show notes. But remember, because this isn't in the show notes, the code RLM is only for people hearing my voice right now. You're going to save 15% off your order using RLM. And yes, this can be stacked with other gift with purchase or BOGO discounts. Thank you so much for listening to the Run Lift Mom podcast. I want to let you know that you can swipe up in the podcast player that you're in to see the show notes. That's going to take you to my website and you're going to get a deep dive on today's show. Cool, huh? You could think of it as a blog post that complements what was covered today with all of the links and resources discussed. Don't forget to check out the podcast partners as well with some really great offers for you. And until I get into your earpiece again, remember, for while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. That's from 1 Timothy 4:8, and this has been the Run Lift Mom podcast.